Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes checking in on a Wednesday night for your Thursday morning delivery. And we're excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts. There's some really good stories out there just to unpack. The ones that involve the big names are always the juiciest, obviously. And a lot of big names have been doing some media. So we'll talk about that. We also got an interview with Vanessa Demopoulos, a UFC strawweight who's won four of her last five fights. She's got a fight coming up against Emily Ducati on May 18th in Las Vegas at the Apex. It's one of those chill fight night cards at the Apex. Anyway, we got this watch along coming up also on May 4th. So starting today and throughout the next week or so, we'll give you those reminders because the watch alongs are a lot of fun. And those are really the big cards, right? The ones that move the needle. So here's your first reminder that on May 4th, we'll be doing a watch-along back to our normal start time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Hell, I feel like we might have even said that on Monday show. But that's the one with Pantoja and Erceg, as well as Aldo and Jonathan Martinez in the co-main event. We'll reset, and we'll be right back to start the show. How exhausted were you after the last watch along when we did 13 fights?
It wasn't so much my brain this time as it was more my body, just kind of being in the same position for so long, you know? That one, that one was bad. But how often does it happen, right?
And we had to do the show with Fada.
Right.
So really, it was 13 fights plus an hour preview show because I was on with Fada and Goes was producing it. And so that's what it is you're kind of restricted to one place, which is your seat. And that's fine and dandy, but it's hard to like move around and take care of what you need to take care of, whether it's a bite from a pizza or drink of a soda or a beer or just use the restroom, anything, man. So we're kind of multitasking as we're doing it. But yeah, this next one will be 9 fights. And we're looking forward to it. And hopefully you'll join us for it. I think I told Goes, but Goes at least got to hit the hay. I left here and got in a taxi. And then I was at a party till about 4 a.m. our time. Because it ended at 1 our time. And then we didn't come home till 4 a.m. our time. And so, I was exhausted. I was just ripped to shreds. Now, at the party, I could sit. I had a few drinks, and I got to chill, but I wanted to sleep.
I look like Ric Flair when he gets thrown into that turnbuckle and falls back over.
Yeah.
That's how I landed on my bed.
Hey, you know what? I wasn't going to talk about this, but since you went down the rabbit hole of pro wrestling, so NXT, is that the lighter weight class guys or are they like the newer guys? But I heard they're going to the Apex.
They're like, I don't want to call it AAA, but I mean, in a way it is, you know, for WWE. But yeah, they're going to start doing shows at the Apex. But
are they like lighter weight fighters or are there big dudes that are just starting out?
It's just, younger generation.
Every once in a while,
newer,
all 185 pounds as opposed to 300 pounds. They're just younger.
No, yeah, they're just they're just newer. It's almost like Contender Series in a way. Like,
I got you. Okay.
The next stars are coming out through there. That's where Shayna Baszler kind of came through. But then, like, I think Becky Lynch was there not too long ago. Like, every once in a while, some of the other ones, like, if they're recovering from an injury or something, they might make a stop at NXT, you know?
And so the setting will be like the old TBS shows for the NWA and then WCW. Remember when they'd kind of do it in a studio?
Yeah. I was just watching some old Dusty Rhodes stuff. And then if you ever watch Ironclaw, the movie that came out about the Von Erichs, you'll kind of see a lot of that type of stuff.
Is it a good movie?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. There's a couple weird things about it. Like, for one, they just made one brother not exist. I thought that was kind of strange, but they explained it. They were just like, it was just too much suicide. But
how did they make one guy not exist? What does that mean?
They just didn't. One of the brothers wasn't included. Like, he never
existed. In the Netflix.
In the movie.
Oh, okay. But he was a wrestler and the family included him in the family.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Netflix just didn't address him.
It wasn't a Netflix. It was an actual movie that came out.
Oh, okay.
But I can see it on Netflix?
Or what did I say? Like, where can I see it, I guess, is the question.
I'm not really sure, but maybe Amazon Prime or something. But they...
Like two or three more days, so I got to bust out a couple movies.
There was a couple things... Okay. Fuck it, we're already in. It's a good movie. It's very heavy, okay? But I thought the casting was great. However, the one thing that just drove me batshit crazy, the guy that they got to play Ric Flair kind of had a good look to him. And there were times where he did sound like Ric Flair, but there were times where he was just dookie Ric Flair. Like, I don't know how to explain it to you. Like, and it kind of ruined everything because...
Like when Alfred would be Batman in the original Batman series?
Yeah. It just... everything else was so spot on. You know, like the dad, Fritz Von Erich, was almost identical. Like, everything was really good. But that one thing, and it's such a major character, Ric Flair, that they just... maybe they just couldn't find a person that was the best they could do. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to give a spoiler out. But I remember watching Kerry Von Erich and Ric Flair at the old Cotton Bowl. It wasn't Jerry's World, and it wasn't Dallas Cowboy Stadium, but it was a stadium show. So this is like a 1980s wrestling match, and yet they did it in a stadium. That's how big the Von Erichs were. I think they were from Denton, Texas, which I think is a suburb of Dallas, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, that family's... There's been a lot of tragedy in that family. And don't quote me, but I think four brothers took their lives out of six. And one and another one even passed away as well, but not via suicide. So, yeah, I really want to see it. I want to check it out. Oh, yeah. I remember Gino Hernandez was part of that stable of fighters and Chris Adams. And
it's so... For those of you who follow our show, we also have Wrestling Junkie, right? And there's a podcast there called Under the Ring, where we interviewed Kevin Von Erich. And man, he had the saddest like quote. But basically, when they came to him with the idea of doing the movie and all that, he said he didn't really like tell them, yes, but you got to do this, you got to do that. He said he only gave them one instruction. And he says, I just want people to know that I loved my brothers, you know, make sure that comes through.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he said that just kind of like was like, holy crap. He tried to describe what it was like. And he said, the best way I can do it is I used to be somebody's brother and now I'm not. And they're all gone, you know, and that's such a weird feeling, especially when you have four other siblings, you know, like I can't remember what it was. I think it was five of them or four of them or something aside from him.
Mm-hmm.
And that is weird. Like, you used to have a brother, you used to be someone's brother, and now just you're not. and life is so.
You know what's weird is that obviously is, you know, something to think about that I've never thought about that way, especially because, well, you and I are just one, right? So one of us will have that one day unless we die together. Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, as tragic as it's been, it was all at such a young age, and they all could have really lived pretty nice lives, had their careers continue to flourish. But as you were saying that, I thought, man, one day, well, not just us, but unless we precede our parents, one day we won't be someone's son, you know? And I've never thought of it that way. Like our cousins, Fernando, Alfredo, and the other guys, they used to be someone's son, but they've lost both of their parents. So like, kind of weird, huh?
Yeah, strange. But yeah, they'll be there at the Apex, and I think they are going to allow fans and all that. So it'll be a little different, but it'll be a nice little job for somebody.
A job? What do you mean a job?
Like in the commentary world, you know, to be stationed in Vegas, just going in and doing them shows.
I don't think you were starstruck, but was it pretty effing cool to be part of that Von Erich interview?
No, and I'll tell you why. It's the only interview that I've ever missed since I started working with these guys. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a part of that one. Oh. But I got to see it, you know, and yeah, it was, I would have been starstruck. Yeah. And a lot of them, there's a lot of cool ones, man, where you're just like, holy crap, this is Rhea Ripley. I mean, he's had some great ones on there.
Yeah, I was going to say, because even though we're not the biggest wrestling fans, we did grow up cheering for or watching wrestling. And so a lot of the interviews these guys do, they are some of the older fighters. So maybe not starstruck, because obviously we're adults now or whatever, but just kind of like, you know, just an excited feeling of hearing someone go through memory lane to peel back the curtain. When the guest comes on, goes is usually present with the host. So even though he's not part of the interview, there's probably some interaction between you and the wrestler. And then you duck out and then the interview happens or whatever. But I think that would have been a cool one for me.
I think you would have liked it too. I thought about
the barefoot guy, right?
Huh?
He was the barefoot guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you know what else is awesome is you're part of another series with Burt Watson, and it just dropped the 8th episode of Legend to Legend. Burt spoke to Cain Velasquez, and that I think went down today or yesterday, right? It got released.
Yeah, today.
Yeah. So I don't even know if we chatted about it. I guess with me being down here and you being down there, maybe it slipped through the cracks, but how was that one?
That one was cool. Burt, I think, will probably be on the next episode. But yeah, we advise you all to go out there and give it a listen, give it a retweet, push it as much as you can.
The next Junkie Radio, Burt will be on?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, for sure. Everyone share it, tweet it, DM it, whatever. They do really, really good interviews. And not only does Burt usually pull a gem or two out, I think these legends also want to share something that maybe they haven't shared. And then even further to that, our videographer, Abby, who kind of glues it all together behind the scenes, he actually goes out and finds some really cool pics or videos and kind of ties it all together. So it's really, really quality. I mean, all we're saying is go watch one of them, and then I'll guarantee you, you'll say, all right, where can I find the other 7? There's some good stuff in here.
This one has some really good pictures and video of like when he's a kid. He's a big kid too, man. Mm-hmm. But it really just makes you fall even more into the story. And yeah, it's really cool, man. This one was a good one.
And speaking of Cain, and I guess we'll get the show going here. Cain, you know, all of you know by now that he has some serious legal proceedings ahead of him. He's got a trial date now set because he's accused of attempted murder. And for those that don't know, a few years ago, Cain Velasquez got in his truck and was trying to chase down a man who allegedly molested his kid. And in that process, which was like, I think like about, geez, now I'm testing my memory, but I think it was about 7 mile pursuit or something like that. So that's kind of a ways, you know. Mm-hmm. He actually fired and he hit the stepdad of the alleged sexual assaulter, and nobody died, but you know, that's why the charges attempted murder. So this trial's kind of been pushed back a few times, and it looks like he's got new representation, because I remember seeing the name Mark Aragos. What was his name? Mark
Garagos.
Garagos, yeah. Who's a noted high-profile attorney. He usually was the one that was attached to this case. This case has kind of been buried for a while, and so I see a new name now, Renee Hessling, and she asked for like a continuance, and so the other side said, hey, listen, this has been done a few times. We need to get going. So the judge decided that the trial date needed to go on, and so it will be starting on what I say September 9th is when it starts in Santa Clara County. So this is the former UFC heavyweight champion that we're talking about, who did the interview with Burt Watson recently, legend. It just so happens that this news was put out there today. So once the case starts, it'll be similar to, I guess, what you're seeing with the former president. You know, jury selection, and then things get underway, and you know, I don't know how long this one will take or anything like that, but mm-hmm. I think we'll finally have some clarity as to, you know, what his future is like. He was in jail for a while, and he was allowed to get out, and I think like under home supervision, unless he had to work, he had to basically be at home confinement. And I think that's good in the sense of this is a really, really peculiar case. I'm on the side of, like, I'm not into vigilantes or anything like that. But I guess I understood his rage through all this. And, you know, I remember we used to talk about this with Richard Hunter when we used to do the Triple G show with him. And Les Goes has changed his mind. You know, he was also of the opinion, like, hey, man, they wouldn't cut us that slack. Rules are rules. Laws are laws. He should still be in prison. And, you know, but I don't think anyone disagreed with he needs his day in court for sure. But he has been in home confinement. And aside from being able to go out and provide for his family, what does that mean? I guess work, coach, appearances. Yeah, he basically, I think, stays at home. Did this come up in Legend of Legend Goes?
No. So in Legend of Legend, he's not allowed to talk about the case. So I think Bert kind of said a little thing like, listen, obviously we all know what's going on, but this is a topic that just can't be touched. That's why we don't touch it. But
got it. Okay.
It's an ongoing court case. So technically it could be used against him.
Yeah. If you're curious, he faces a minimum of 20 years and up to life in prison, according to the California Penal Code. He would face additional time if he was found guilty of the other counts. I'm trying to see how many counts there are. I thought there was 9 or 10. There's attempted murder, shooting at a motor vehicle or aircraft, assault with a firearm. That's 5, because that's 3 counts there. Assault with a deadly weapon. There's another 3. That's 8. Willfully discharging a firearm from the vehicle. That's 9. Carrying the loaded firearm. That's 10. Yeah, 10 counts. It looks like he's pleaded not guilty to all of them. His bail was $1 million, which I think you had to put up 10% to be able to, for the bond guy to insure it. Mm-hmm. So he had to come up with that money. This is crazy, man. I haven't seen kind of like the details of the case in a while, but I guess in about what, a little less than 6 months, this thing will finally have some sort of a conclusion.
Yeah. I mean, look, even if it doesn't go his way, which I anticipate it probably won't, he's served some of the sentence, and I don't think he would be in there for that long. You know, I know like the worst case is pretty bad, but I don't think it would be that long.
Yeah, I'm on the side of he did serve some time. I think it was a little less than a year. And I consider it a crime of passion. And do I excuse him for it? No. Is it the way to deal with it? No. But I can't imagine what his rage was. you know, in finding out. And it looks like now there's specific, Ghost and I used to kind of just be more vague about it. We knew it was his son, and for a while we wouldn't say it, but the story now clearly says that because he has two kids, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I just don't like saying it because not everybody knows. So why bring more attention to a poor kid, you know?
Yeah. When was this too? I guess the son would be 8 now or 9. I don't know. Yeah, that sucks, man. It really, really does. But all right. Well, as we get closer, I'm sure the case will be part of our Junkie Radio shows in September, you know, whatever it is that we find out about it. I think this will be one of the higher profile ones involving MMA. And I hate to stray off topic, goes, but whatever happened to Phil Baroni and everything that happened with him in Mexico?
As far as I know, just he's still there.
Me too.
I think he was moved and then he got moved back into that bad prison. I don't know.
Yeah, like for example, War Machine, you know, that one kind of was followed until now he's serving time in Nevada. But this one with Baroni, it's over a year old now. And I would say I haven't heard much news in the last year. It's about a year and 4 months old. And in the last year, I don't think I've heard much. It just kind of quieted down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Hermes Franca, remember he had to serve some time, and he was an actual title challenger to Sean Sherk, if I'm not mistaken. So definitely there's been some guys that I almost want to say, and gals. There's been some gals, I can't remember. But Jason Miller, he's another guy that's had problems with the law. So, but I think this Velasquez one will be the most high-profile one yet, right? Lee Murray?
Yeah. It's weird. So I don't ever really delete numbers off of my phone. So I actually came across Hermes Franca's number the other day, out like literally 3 or 4 days ago. And I was thinking about that. It has been some time since all that went down, but
mm-hmm. I was gonna say, do you think we can get to 10? Chael Sonnen had a case involving real estate fraud, I think.
Well, so what,
that would be 7. Can you think of any other names that we can
get? We're talking about people that just have been in trouble with the law, or
yeah, they got in trouble with the law or whatever.
Well, John Jones is always.
Yeah, John Jones, the hit and run. And not only the hit and run, but the one with the strippers in New York. Mm-hmm. So let's just say that's 8. Two more.
There's, we need Michael Falcao, remember at the.
Oh, he got killed in a gas station in Brazil, right?
Right.
His name was Big Rig, like Johnny Hendrix. And then I know who the last one will be. It was a guy named, it's on the tip of my tongue. He was supposed to fight Jose Aldo. And he viciously either killed his wife or hurt his wife, domestically abused her.
Then he threw dogs on her or something.
He trained a dog. Well, Josh Grisby, was that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then remember Brian Bowles, former WEC champion? I think he did something too.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to be a cop, as ironic as that is.
Yeah.
He used to be a cop, became a fighter, became a world champion, was really mellow. And then all of a sudden he pops up in the news. He had done something as well. So we pushed past 10, that's 11. I'm sure we'll think of some more, but Jose Aldo. So I brought his name up. Notice how I'm connecting dots here.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to fight at 301. Mike Bond, our colleague, caught up with him. And he's saying, look, this is the last fight of my contract. If I feel good, then we'll see what my options are. He says he's even reconsidered, or he hasn't ruled out re-signing with the UFC, making another run at bantamweight. Remember, he had won 3 in a row before he got stopped by Merab Dvalishvili. And now, as we say, Merab Dvalishvili gobbled other fools up. There's no shame in that one. I mean, that guy might be a future champ. So anyway, it looks like Aldo has that option. But more than anything, I was like, Jose, just come on. Shoot us straight here. You want to get out of that because you probably have heard of some big money opportunities out there and you want to be able to go and get them. And I ain't hating on that, but that's what it sounds like to me, is he just wants to do this fight and get out and just box a little, make some money.
Mm-hmm. I think you could probably, because they have to know, like going into your last fight, they have to sort of know the temperature of what's going on, like whether or not they want you to resign or not. And the way you judge that is by looking at the opponent, right? And for me, it seems like they're more trying to put his opponent over with this fight than they would have it be a fight that they think Jose could win to kind of revitalize his career. So in my opinion, I think the UFC's already made their decision, and so has Jose Aldo based on that. That makes sense?
Yeah, I just think the wear and tear of MMA camps are brutal. And so when Jose Aldo went out there and he experienced boxing and he got a decent payday, I think what he realized was, hey, the name Jose Aldo has some value. And now if I don't have to train wrestling and jiu-jitsu and I can just kind of box older guys like me, then It seems like the playing field is leveled out. And again, the money seems to be better. The shackles are off. And dude, that guy's been a world champ with 7 UFC title defenses and 2 in the WEC. So 9 all together. Like, that dude's a legend. You know what I mean? And even though he left on a loss, he still left on a good bantamweight run in addition to the featherweight. The only thing that saddens me is that Holloway kind of eclipsed him a little bit. Well, not eclipsed him, but beat him. He didn't. His resume doesn't match up to all those when it comes to title defenses. And then Volk also beat him, you know? So kind of bums me out because, like, when GSP left the sport, you know, Usman reached like 5 title defenses, and yet there was this argument, well, who's greater, you know? And then next thing you know, Usman loses his next one. But, yeah, GSP never lost to Usman, whereas Aldo lost. Goes, I think the major factor is MMA just beats you up. The wear and tear is just not for someone in his upper 30s, especially someone that's proven everything they need to prove. Aldo's not McGregor. He can't come back, win one fight, and all of a sudden he's in. Mm-hmm. He's got those key losses to Holloway and Volk at featherweight. And then at bantamweight, you know, the guy he beat is about to fight for the title. I suppose if Dvalish really loses, then sure, maybe he could get some sort of a shortcut fight to get to O'Malley, right? But you still got the Sanhagens of the world, Umar and Nurmagomedov, and I'm sure there's some other killers out there as well that are, you know, starting to make their run. So he wants out. He did the UFC a solid. I think the UFC needed him because they exhausted so many names that they were like, duh, what do we do? So I bet you they either called him and rolled the dice, probably called Amanda Nunes and rolled the dice, or he happened to call them and say, hey, man, what would you think of this? And since the UFC's coming to Rio, and they're probably like, bingo, you know? So he fights, he gets paid. If he wins, great. But I really don't think he's going to continue. I think he's just going to go out and get matched up with some of them names that have been thrown around.
I think they probably gave him a really big paycheck. And in boxing, I actually enjoy watching him box. I think he's a good boxer. And he's done fairly well so far. So I think it was Ben Rothwell, right, on the last show that was kind of talking about it. And it's just different, man, when you don't have to train takedowns, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, all that. Your body just can heal, and it gives you new life. And I think Jose sees he can do that. He can make some money along the way. And why not, man? I mean, this is what we talked about on Spinning Backclick. Like, there are so many opportunities to make money outside of the UFC right now if you have the right recipe. Jose Aldo is the right recipe. Jorge Masvidal is the right recipe. Nate Diaz is the right recipe. Some of these guys can do some things outside of the UFC. And even like Chad Mendes has got a second life. Eddie Alvarez has a second life over at BKFC. Ben Rothwell. Like, there's so much that can be done.
Yeah. And like I say, their names mean something. So you might as well cash in on them because that's what the wear and tear was for, you know. So your biggest paydays are at the end of your career usually. Yeah. It sucks that's the way it is, but that's why some of these guys and gals hang around longer than they should, because those are some of the bigger contracts. Plus, later in the lives when you've usually gotten married, you have kids, you have responsibilities, and this is all you've done for the last 15, 20 years. It's like being released from prison. You know, you see the movie Shawshank Redemption. Those guys are shook when they come out. They're like, now what do I do? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to, you know, put an umbrella over all of them and say that none of them are prepared for real life. No, I mean, some go on to start gyms or they learn stuff, or maybe they are educated and they can fall back on that. But it's tough because for a long time, what you've known is that you wake up, then you go break a sweat with the guys and come home, you know, rest a little bit. And then, you know, you go do that again. And so the 9-to-5 thing isn't too appealing. So I trip out a little bit when I see some MMA fighters doing their thing. I don't know if you've seen, but Chris Camozzi's into commercial real estate. So he's doing a few commercials. They'll pop up on my Instagram from time to time. Bristol Morandi's for Henderson.
Yeah.
he's doing some, well, I guess, what is it? City I guess council. He'd be a representative, a local representative. What's that?
He's a representative of city council. Yeah. He actually got tased today. Did you see that?
I saw that, yeah. Tito Ortiz gave that a little bit of a run, and then he said, oh, and then back to Chael. Not that I'm picking on him. I like Chael. Mm-hmm. He ran for office as well. So did Chris Lytle. He ran for office. You know, Lytle's now commentating with BKFC. I think he's found something there. And Chael Sonnen's obviously commentating with ESPN, and he's found something there. So, and then he's got the very, very popular YouTube channel. So I'm glad everyone's, well, not everyone, but a lot of people have found other streams of revenue.
Me too.
Now that they've moved on from, you know, banging, basically.
Yeah, it's important, man. It's especially like some of these older guys that put in the same amount of time, but just didn't get paid what some of the newer generation has gotten. By the way, you brought up Shawshank Redemption. I'm a part of a Facebook group. I'll get you the name of it. But basically, it's people taking pictures in famous movie locations or television locations. And just the other day, like maybe 3 days ago, somebody did one where it was that apartment where Brooks was here, you know, and Red was here. Somebody took a picture in that apartment.
Oh, you're allowed to go in there?
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. But they'll show you like, they show you the picture in the movie and then they show you the picture of them in the same location, you know? Mm-hmm. So like today there was
Brooks is there?
No, no. But like he kind of points to like where it would have been, you know? And then
if it doesn't say Brooks was there, how do we know that's it?
Because they're side by side pictures, like, or one's on top of the other. It's exactly the same. It's just, I mean, like, not exactly the same, but the windows are in the same spot, you know, all that stuff.
I wonder why someone took that off. I wonder, like, who would want to remove that? You know what I mean?
Well, probably because it's like an apartment building or something. You know, like if you've never seen the movie and you walk in, you're gonna go, "What the fuck? What is this? And where is Brooks?"
Well, I would. I'd go, "What is this?" And then when someone goes, "Dude, that was in Shawshank," oh, I'm leaving it there. Then, you know what I mean? But
today was somebody took one. Terminator 2, when they're chasing him on a bike, just that little area, you know, matches up. But it's pretty cool. Every once in a while, you'll come across some cool movie stuff.
I know the house where Tom Cruise goes to have dinner with Charlie after the volleyball game.
I've been by that
in Oceanside.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
And I've seen the mall where they filmed Back to the Future. Remember the mall, the guy gets gunned down?
Mm-hmm.
I've the been Fox by that West Covina, and I've been to the golf and stuff where Karate Kid was filmed, the first one.
Mm.
And it's not in the valley; it's like in Norwalk or Downey, California.
Mm.
And we went during the day. It fucking looked like a ghetto golf and stuff. That's for sure. Whereas, you know, when it's at night and the lights and just kind of looks different, more happening. Mm-hmm. During the day, it looked like a dud, man, like a dump.
Mm.
But that was the one. I was just going to say, I wonder if we're institutionalized. Here's what I mean by that. Let's just say junkie says goes. That's it. The run's over. We got to let you go. You have 17 years in the game. You've learned the radio game a little bit, whether it's satellite, podcast, and then behind the scenes, video, and I'm sure you've even learned, you know, some journalism techniques and stuff like that. Do you go, well, thanks, Junkie, it was fun. Let's just say, you know, it wasn't because of your performance. It's just that you had to part ways. So thanks, Junkie, it was fun. Hey, MMA or combat sports, what you got out there for me? Or do you make a pivot and go into just a whole new career?
I think never say never, but I would want to be looking at a new career probably first, unless somebody came in with a decent offer to stay in MMA.
Mm-hmm.
But I would probably
Back on your degree, or is there even yet another interest that many of us don't know that you would pursue?
I would probably fall back on my degree, but I've always wanted, I mean, it's so hard, so it's not like snap your fingers and just get that job. I've always wanted to write for television or movies or work in production for those.
Mm-hmm.
So like if I had the resources, that's what, like if you asked me what job would you have in the world that would make you super happy, probably something like that.
So like if one of our listeners says, hey, we actually need a writer for Family Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be like, that's what I'm talking about? Or no, I was looking more for like the drama side of things, like more serious or.
No, Family Guy would be good, or a different type of movie. Not so much drama. Maybe
and
horror.
You know, not to pat ourselves on the back, but we come up with some zany shit with what ifs and sarcasm. Dude. The nurse that covers, that works for us and protect, or is my mom's side, I throw so much shit at her, and you should see her and mom laugh their ass off, but they actually think of this these things, but I put them in really, really weird situations, you know? But they're dying, like days later, they're just dying at the stuff that I've been putting them in. And I'm thinking, I wonder if that's like, that's the crazy stuff you do see in those cartoons or in shows like How I Met Your Mother, you know, where they just think of stuff, you know, like you just have to have like a creative mind or a little bit like that, you know?
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah. All right. Back to mixed martial arts. So, yeah, Aldo did an interview with Mike Bond. Check it out. I smell what The Rock is cooking. I just think he wants the last fight. I don't think he's going to reconsider MMA, and I just think he knows something big's up. And he's even saying maybe on Netflix under Jake Paul and Mike Tyson,
mm-hmm.
or maybe rehashing the Floyd thing, which they're going to fight at the top of a building, goes with saying, like a Dubai or whatever.
No, it was around that time where they had Floyd was supposed to fight somebody else, but I know Aldo was one of the names that was being talked about around that time.
Let's get to our guest, Vanessa Demopoulos. She's got a fight coming up against Emily Ducati on May 18th. It's a UFC fight night in Las Vegas at the Apex. And that particular night, I believe we got Edson Barbosa. Well, I got rid of the page. Way to go, George. It is Barbosa versus Lerone Murphy. So they're the main event. Demopoulos and Ducati, they're on the prelims, I believe, or maybe they make the cut. I don't know. We'll be right back with Demopoulos. Junkie Nation, what's going on? Gorgeous George and Goes are back with one of our favorites. Vanessa Demopoulos joins us now on the program. She fights Emily Ducati at an upcoming UFC fight night at the Apex Center in Las Vegas. Let's see, a little under a month to go. So if I'm not mistaken, Vanessa, this is about the time where you're starting to really grind and push it, some of the harder workouts, right? Like peaking, or not peaking, but because obviously you want to taper off towards the end, but at what point in your camp are you now?
I'm at the camp of working hard, or the part of camp where we are working very, very hard. Yes, every single day, multiple sessions a day. But I mean, that's my life all of the time. So the only difference is like the intentionality behind what we're doing now.
Would you say that for someone that's won four of her last five, you are where you want to be? Because We've always told you this. You come across very charming. And then, of course, winning is just so important because this roster is full of athletes. So, you know, as soon as your fight's done, here comes another 26 bodies the following week. And, you know, everyone moves on. So how do you feel you are being accepted for your latest accomplishments?
Well, I'd like to think that I'm being accepted really well. You know, I do have some like amazing audiences and people see me, they recognize me often. I love everybody. So I'd like to think that I'm being received well. And hopefully after this fight, I'll get to like start working my way up towards like higher rankings or even into the rankings. And then that way I can start working my way towards main cards, towards pay-per-view events, things like that, you know, fights with bigger audiences and bigger eyes.
What what kind of an impact has moving to Vegas done for you?
It's made the biggest difference. Not only in my fight camp, you know, and like changing coaches and all of that, which I had done a few different times, unfortunately, but being here, like the coaching is just incredible. Like I feel like everybody's really on the same page, but being a part of the PI, you know, and being able to have access to my food, have access to recovery, have access to like, you know, the strength and conditioning, the PT, like the facility. And it just makes my life so much easier being in fight camp and being able to be here in Las Vegas.
What about the food? Is it like, how can I put it to you? How much of a difference does, how much money do you save? I hear that, I don't know if you're an organic eater or whatever, but I hear food can be expensive for athletes and then specifically MMA athletes because it's got to be clean. And at the same time, you know, like that's part of your job is making weight. So it's got to be delicious enough. And, you know, you have to have enough so that it gives you the energy for these tough workouts. But can you talk about that? You know, because like I said, I've just heard someone tweeted it the other day. I wish I could remember who, but someone said eating clean's expensive.
Yeah, it is so expensive. And I mean, yeah, I'm like an organic kind of girl. So when I have to do my own food preps and stuff, it's like it gets out of control. And then plus the time that you have to put into cooking and meal prepping and putting everything away and making sure that like you have to cook every few days on top of all the hard training that you're doing. Like being here in Las Vegas, I get to like go pick up my food, take it home and not worry about a thing. I don't have to like count macros. I don't have to like do literally anything. I just pick it up and eat. And it's such a breeze. It's honestly like the easiest process ever. I mean, if food's basic, you know, like you're getting like basic rice, basic protein, but it's clean food and it's food that I can trust and my weight just falls off.
We're gonna introduce you to the opposite of plain pretty soon, but we'll get to that a little later. I do want to tell you UFC 300 right was in town.
Yeah.
And it had such a massive effect on the fans. It created so many new fans. It was just buzzing the city.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of like carry a little bit of that momentum yourself into this fight? What was it like to sit down and watch that?
Oh my gosh. I mean, UFC 300, like literally one of the best cards of the decade. Like we're not going to see another card that's like UFC 300 with the excitement that it brought. And I think like the fans were excited from fight number one, the whole way through. Like it was just a giant roller coaster ride. And I feel like it was electric, you know? So, but I mean, I'm always on fire personally. Like it doesn't matter what events are happening. I mean, Las Vegas has been crazy recently. We've had the Super Bowl, we had the F1, UFC 300, like so many large events come here to Las Vegas so consistently. And it's just like, it really just lights a fire under my ass to be able to be here and just be present with the moment and take advantage of getting to be an athlete, getting to be a UFC athlete in such like a big city and getting to show off in front of the world when I finally get to step into the arena.
And your division was on display that night. You know, and at the PI, there's so many athletes, but I know the champ is there frequently. Do you ever run into her? Do you ever have like conversations or do you guys ever not spy on each other, but kind of watch each other's trainings and see, you know, what makes people tick?
Yeah, Whaley's actually amazing. She's honestly like biggest sweetheart ever. I got to train with her in Phoenix, Arizona at Fight Ready. And now that she comes here to do her camps in Las Vegas, I get to see her here in Las Vegas. And we have good energy together. We don't train together. But yeah, like I get to see her training. She sees me training. And but it's like really good vibes with one another. So I love her energy. She's just such like a giant bundle of just like joy, you know?
What were your initial thoughts, if you don't mind sharing, when you got your opponent? How quickly do you go in there and watch footage? Did you already know a lot about her? And what were your thoughts when you initially got your opponent?
Oh, not only do I know a lot about her, Emily's like, she's a sweetheart, you know, like she came here to Las Vegas. She trained over at Extreme. And in fact, like me, her and Hannah Goldie, we all went hiking together over in like Red Rock. So, I mean, we've like spent a little bit of time together. So that was, it was nice to kind of get to know her on a little bit of a personal level. And then when we got the fight contract, it's not like I hit her up, you know, and she didn't hit me up either. It's like, we both kind of knew that it might happen even while she was here, I felt like. So it's okay. I mean, like that's, it's going to happen, you know, like we're, I feel like for being here in Las Vegas, we see so many people, like it would be almost impossible for me not to fight somebody that I knew.
Vanessa, it's always great to catch up with you. We'll keep it short for today because I want to save a great opportunity for us to be in studio together after your fight. But I want to wish you the best of luck in your camp and, you know, go out there and keep adding to what you've done so far because it's a really, really great run that you're on. And hopefully the UFC realizes it. You know, there's that it factor that I know the promoters always look for. And I feel like you have some of that. You know what I mean? So that, along with being on a solid run like you're on, I see big fights ahead of you. So keep taking care of business and keep being you. I'm not just blowing smoke. You don't know how many times we show up to interviews and it's like, oh, my God. Like, some people just don't deliver the goods. But the minute, you know, you have the camera and you're set and you're ready to go and you're smiling, I think that's why the fans have always connected with you. So I just wanted to tell you that as well.
Man, thank you so much. You know, and it's, I feel like right now I'm still kind of like at the beginning of my career, which is crazy because we're going on a 7 fights deep now in the UFC. And I love the fans so much. And I want to be able to share this story because like, it's been a crazy freaking ride. It's been a crazy journey, not only getting to the UFC, but just like overcoming life in general. And I can't wait to start really like growing and expanding and all of that so that like people's eyes can get on it. And I can show the freaking world like how capable you can be. So thank you for that recognition. Thank you guys always for your time. I value being here with you guys and being able to talk to you guys. And I think more than anything, it's like, I get to talk to you guys when I got a fight coming up. Right. So it's like, you guys get me like when I'm all like super excited and pumped and ready to go. And I just want to thank you guys for always giving me that attention and that spotlight.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, like I say, we look forward to it and we wish you the best with your camp, the weight cut, and the fight. Thank you,
thank Vanessa, you guys.
And take care. All right, we'll see you.
All right, see you guys soon.
Little monster's always a bundle of energy, huh?
Always. I'm never at the gym, around town. I ran into her one time at the hill, you know, by our house.
Mm-hmm.
Just always in a good mood.
I wonder why she doesn't pursue being a training partner of Zhang Weili. Like, I don't think Zhang Weili would say, no, I don't want you to know them secrets. Like, I'm not bagging on Vanessa, but she's not really looked at as a title contender just yet, you know? But it's a body at her weight class. You'd think they could kind of make each other better, I think, right?
Yeah, I would think. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, if I was Vanessa, I'd probably be like, you know, like that. I mean,
you're only going to get better.
Think about, there's a guy from Georgia who's best friends now with a guy from Long Island, and they never had to fight each other. You know, they managed to figure it out. So I don't see how a girl from the United States and a girl from China couldn't help each other out as well.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Hey.
I want to remind our audience, we had an interview a couple shows ago with Ricardo Lamas, and I saw a couple people dropping some Joe Rogan where, you know, get this guy on to talk about that. It's super cool. And keep that up, because those are the type of things that I think make a difference. If you enjoyed that interview, I got a couple texts saying, man, this is some crazy stuff. If you enjoy that, I mean, he only told like 5-10% of what happened on Rogan's. That guy goes
for the thing with his dad.
Yeah. Please, you know, tweet that. You can include us if you want, include Ricardo, include Joe Rogan. But I think it's a story that needs to be told. So thanks.
Well, please include Migos. If you've already seen them and tweeted them and retweeted them, please include me so then I can go and do them as well. And yes, let's get the word out there. Rick's a good guy. And not only have we covered him for a long time, from WEC days to UFC days, but we also did a military visit with him, and he was super cool. And he's always been laid back. Like, you know, nothing. He doesn't play that card of, well, I'm a famous fighter or anything like that. No, you know, we're not like that. He's not like that. So that's, I think, why we get along. But he even popped into, that was another fighting event that we watched together. But anyway, how about Islam Makhachev? I enjoy hearing from him because I really think he's a great fighter. And who knows, maybe one day he can exceed Khabib Nurmagomedov. But there are some things that come out of his mouth sometimes where I'm like, well, I realize you're legit. You have definitely handed people their lunch. But take it easy, Islam Makhachev. Like, I don't know. I don't know why this guy frustrates me sometimes. He's yet to defend against the 55er. He beat Oliveira, I'll give him that. But he's yet to defend against the 55er. But it seems like no one at 55 turns him on. And so now he wants to fight Leon Edwards. You know, so yet again, yes, another one bites the dust and falls for this whole champ thing. I'm used to that. But bro, like, you don't believe in at least addressing your weight class? I mean, yeah, he signed to fight Poirier. And I would say Sarukian's next, but I think we've said it enough, and hopefully other people have said it enough. That's not what adds to your legacy. Title offenses add to your legacy, because there's been a lot of champs. But when you still say, who are the greatest fighters out there? Mm-hmm. Most of them, like Jones and GSP, only added that little cherry on their sundae at the end of their career. They were already great before it. Anderson Silva don't need that shit. Jose Aldo don't need that shit. You know what I mean? And GSP and John Jones don't need. You could take away John Jones's Cyril Gone win and GSP's Michael Bisping win, and they're still top 1, 2, 3 or whatever. You know, address your weight class, and then when it can organically happen, cool. But guess what, man? Leon's got Bilal Muhammad, Shavkat Rakhmonov. I don't think Usman can get to him again, but maybe Ian Garry. I don't know. He just seems to have his hands full right now.
It's a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And then Makhachev. Well, Poirier's there because we couldn't make the Gaethje thing happen because you weren't ready. Otherwise, it would have been Gaethje. Mm-hmm. And Holloway beat Gaethje, so Holloway did want to fight you at some point. You kind of would have to fight him. Like, he doesn't. What does he say? I got the quote right here. He's just not excited by him. How could you not be excited by a guy that just had one of the most spectacular KOs of all time? And he's down your alley, champ. He's a featherweight moving up. You know, I know it sounds like I'm trashing the guy, but that's all he's done since he's won the title is fought a featherweight moving up. That's why you're a beast and you manhandle him, you know? But no, man, let's see Poirier, Sarukian, and maybe one other guy. And if by then Edwards has added a few title defenses as well, all right. We'll chat then. But this whole thing about, yeah, dude, I want to move up and I want to do this. Oh, God, it gets on my nerves.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating. I like him because he does interviews and he does speak his mind. And I probably agree with like 85% of what he says. But every once in a while, he just has that nugget that doesn't really make much sense. And he has to understand that he's chasing Khabib. And it's not a layup. But people are setting him up where he has a lot of people that are coming out, people in the know that are saying, we think he's actually better than Khabib. So really, all you got to do is just defend that title a couple times, man, and you might be right there, you know, where we don't even question it anymore. but going up to 170, like, why? And you can just do that later. You know, it's, it doesn't matter if you're interested or not. It's your job. You gotta defend that strap. You gotta defend it against the right people.
Yeah, exactly. Going on here in the news, Justin Gaethje. Now, this I like covering. Mm-hmm. Here's an interview that he did where he says he plans, by the way, the Makachev interview was courtesy of the New York Post. Let's give them a little bit of love. A few people lately have been using our content and not giving us love. And so that kind of, I wouldn't say it bothers me, but just what's right is right. So Justin Gaethje did an interview. He did it with MMA Hangout, and he plans to limit physical training for 6 months at least after the UFC 300 knockout loss. I love hearing that. He says, quote, metaphorically, I could be ready tomorrow, but physically, I think, again, I want to take care of myself. I do think that repeated concussions, you know, with me going to sleep like that, me receiving that shot, it would be foolish for me to jump back into training anytime before 180 days. I could do cardio. I can stay in shape. That's what I want to do, especially the older I get, the harder it is to get back in the shape of my life. So I want to stay active, but obviously the physical contact is going to be limited for quite some time just because I want to preserve myself. Dude, that was music to my ears.
Yeah,
I love it. You're a fighter. Kind of show that maturity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I just think that time goes by so fast. I'm a little disappointed in Jamal Hill. He's going a little quicker than I think he should. And I just think some of these fighters fall into the trap of the UFC, because the UFC knows it's hard for fighters to turn fights down, especially when they come off a loss, because they can't stand that taste. And sometimes they use that leverage. Why is Jamal Hill fighting Khalil Roundtree? Well, I mean, maybe I shouldn't say that. I know Roundtree's put together a win streak, but he's not regarded as a title contender, or he's never been a title challenger, much less a champion. I wasn't expecting Hill to fight him, but, you know, the UFC needs bodies, right? So at 303, which is International Fight Week, he gets down against Jamal Hill. And I wouldn't say his KO was as vicious as Justin Gaethje, but it was on the same night as Justin Gaethje. And that fight is what? Less than, dude, it's 6 weeks away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Gaethje doesn't even want to, he doesn't even want to think about anything that has to do with a fight until it's been at least 6 months. So I applaud Justin Gaethje for those comments.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do. And when you look at Justin's history, like not taking fights on short notice, all that. Hey, man, maybe that's the reason why he's still here at this age after this many fights, still banging it out. There's got to be something to that. Jamal Hill, I get where he's coming from. It's just scary to me, man. If you were to have two back-to-back KOs like that, right. I've seen it so many times. Fighters just don't really come back the best way from that type of thing. But,
and not only that, if he were to lose to Hill or Khalil Roundtree, it would be, let's just say it was KO, you know, that would be two concussions back to back, and then those two losses also kind of send you downwards a little bit, whereas right now, you know, there's times where you can just kind of sit on the outside and not do anything, and then the vision, just because of the wins and losses, all of a sudden you just kind of get moved up into a place that you weren't, because you played the right, you know, your cards the right way. Example, Justin Gaethje last July, I believe, or August, knocks out Dustin Poirier for the BMF title, and Poirier had been on a run, right? So Justin Gaethje, A, evens the score with Poirier, B, wins the BMF belt, which when he fought at 300, I believe he got pay-per-view points because it was a title defense, they called it. And so Poirier, in the meantime, has to say, all right, so he's kind of doing what I just kind of criticized Hill for doing. He's taking someone lower in the pecking order in Benoit Saint-Denis. And maybe that's what inspired Jamal Hill. But Jamal Hill's doing it within 6 weeks, whereas Dustin Poirier just did it in March, and he lost in July, so he took the appropriate amount of time off. So, but now Poirier lost to the guy who just got knocked out by Max Holloway. So now Poirier, all of a sudden, guess what? Right place, right time, boom, title fight. And I think Jamal Hill, if he just patiently waited, you know, those other guys, maybe a Yuri Prochazka or Magomed Ankalaev, maybe one of them takes a lot. Next thing you know, Hill could be in the running again. They might want to see him versus Pajeda again. I don't know. But sitting back isn't the worst thing in the world sometimes.
I just think he wants to erase the memory of that loss as quick as possible.
So then that's pride and ego, right?
I mean, I don't know, but I think that's what it is. To me, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, I think it's too soon, but it's done. It's in the books. And back to Gaethje. He's going to just hang back, see how the division plays out and do his thing, which is what John Jones, I guess, has been doing, except he's the one that holds the belt. He announced that he's back to training for the first time since getting a surgery on his torn pectoral. It was this past October. He was scheduled to fight in November. Now, since then, we have an interim champion in Tom Aspinall and a Stipe Miocic, I guess, his opponent, who is now just a year older, like 3 years removed since his last fight. It's a fight no one wants to see. I don't know. They said late summer, early fall is when he's supposed to be back, but the story didn't have anything attached to him in terms of a name or nothing like that. But by now, I know I have. I've moved on. I want to see Aspinall against Jones.
Yeah, me too. Just every day that goes by, that fight makes less and less sense, the Stipe fight. It's just ridiculous at this point.
It's like if somebody were to fight Floyd and beat them now, yeah, it'd be Floyd's first loss in boxing, but then we'd all go, you know, he's fucking 46, right? Like, it's not that big of a deal anymore or whatever. Yeah, you know, Miocic, greatest UFC heavyweight champion. I don't think anyone will argue that. Possibly the greatest MMA heavyweight champ. Some still believe it's Fedor. Who knows? But he's a stud, future Hall of Famer. But he's older, you know, and he hasn't fought in a long time. So Jones beating him, that whole legacy thing, I don't know. There's going to be so many eye rolls to it all. And who knows? Maybe right now I'm actually auditioning for one of those Dana White videos where at the end it turns out to be a great fight. And then he shows the media pissing on it, you know, before the fight happened.
Yeah.
Did we talk about that? We did, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was dumb. It was funny, though. It was funny. We weren't on it. Not just Goz and I, but Junkie wasn't on it. But, you know, who knows when that editing was done. And how about this thing? Drigas Duplessis says he walks around at 222. Says he's seen Yuri Prochazka at the PI. Says he thinks he walks around bigger than Yuri Prochazka. He made this comment before Yuri Prochazka actually beat Alexander Rakic. He says he thinks he could fight at middleweight, which is something Yuri Prochazka, I think, was interested in. Now, again, he's beaten Rakic since then, and right now it seems like his goal is to become light heavyweight champ again. But, God, 222 seems big for a world champion that cuts to 185, no?
Yeah. I think I would be a little uncomfortable if I was his coach, if I was part of his camp. But the one thing Drika seems to do is, like, when he's got a fight, he's dialed in, and the best Drikas is going to show up. So, you know, it looks like he's got a recipe down so far. I guess we can't really hate on him, but it does seem like a lot.
There's not that many quality light heavyweights. Excuse me.
Forrest Griffin used to walk around, I think, something like that, pretty big. And he was,
yeah, he was like 245, 250, and he would cut to 205.
Yeah.
So he was a really big light heavyweight. So was Tito. Drikas, when you see him next to Izzy's 6'4", but he's more lankier. Drikas is thicker, but Drikas is about 6'2", but he is kind of a unit. He is pretty big. And Strickland, you know, he used to be a 70. And so he's more on the lighter side. Have you seen him next to Alex Fajeda, man? He looks like a son.
Yeah.
Fajeda's like 6'6". He's a monster.
Monster, dude.
Yeah. So anyways, folks, that's kind of the latest news. On the way out, I just want to tell people there's a knuckle mania. So bare knuckle, we talked about Ben Rothwell. He fights Todd Duffy this weekend in, I guess, what's called a title eliminator. And because the champ's defending his belt that on that fight card as well. So I'd imagine the winner gets a shot at the title. And then in the main event, you got Mike Perry at the Iago Alves. So that should be a good one, too. It's in L.A. I don't think Bare Knuckle comes out to the West Coast very much. So if you're a fan of Bare Knuckle, maybe this is your chance to go take it in. It's this weekend, all right? Same night as the UFC fight card with Nicolau and Alex Perez at the top of the bill. And if you're sitting at home watching them, just as that UFC's ending, Knucklemania will start. And if you want to watch Knucklemania, sign up for the app. It's about $8 a month, but you'll get all the fights, all their fights for that price, including their pay-per-views. That's not kind of a bad deal. I suppose you could cancel at some point, man. I don't know. But that's what Ben Rothwell was promoting. So I think that's your way in to give it a run for 6 months. But yeah, it's a quality stream, and it's really, really good pacing, and it's a lot of violence, and you don't have the ground game. Some people just don't like the ground game. You're not going to get no ground game. You're just going to get action. So yeah, Nicolau and Perez. Nicolau, obviously, if he wins, he has a say, I think, in the future of the flyweight division, because the following week is Steven Erceg challenging Alexander Pantoja out in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So that flyweight division has some big, big fights coming up. Manel Kapp can't seem to stay healthy. And not only that, he missed weight as well. I think it was his last fight. So he's got to get a little bit out of that doghouse. I'm not saying he's in bad graces with the UFC, but I'm just saying things have happened. He's got to probably take a fight and win or whatever. But maybe this is Nicolau's chance to get ahead. Who knows?
Yeah, I think no matter where you're at, you're not that far away from a title shot in that division. You know, you don't have to put together 6-7 fights. It's more, give us 2-3 really good fights, and you could be potentially in the mix, you know?
Right. Now, Nicolau hasn't fought in a year, and that last fight was a loss to Royval. But like I said, sometimes just sitting out puts you in a good spot. Now, before that, I think he had won, 6 in a row? Yeah, he had won like 5 or 6 in a row. And so he takes that L, right? But Royval has lost to Pantoja. So he's kind of out, you know? Mm-hmm. He has a chance here. We'll see what happens. You got to tune in. It's a Saturday afternoon show, 7 p.m. Eastern for the main card, 4 p.m. Eastern for the prelims. And then I'm going to use Pacific time zone. That fight card is going to end around 7 p.m. Pacific time. 10 p.m. Eastern time. When that's happening, that's when the prelims of Knucklemania will be happening. So you'll be easily able to transfer from one event to the next and not miss any of the big fights. So that's what you're basically missing is the prelims on Bare Knuckle. I think we can all kind of get over that. But, I mean, this day and age, I don't think it's that hard to have 2 or 3 TVs in one room. So just do that. Anyway, folks, thanks so much for tuning in. And we'll catch you on Monday, Spinning Backlick at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Don't forget, if you see the Llamas content on Instagram or Twitter, retweet it. Maybe put in a tag for Joe Rogan, for us. And let's just let it multiply so that we can get Joe Rogan's attention. And hopefully Llamas and his dad can go on there and tell an interesting story of a Cuban immigrant who, well, I don't want to give it away and I don't know it all, but basically a Cuban immigrant who was involved, you know, in part of that revolution around the times, the early days of Fidel Castro. It really seemed interesting. So, and if you haven't listened to it, you know, wherever you catch this show, go back a few episodes. That's Ricardo Llamas. Go out and be a champion. We'll talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, freep.com or wherever you get your podcasts.